We know for certain that pastoral compensation has not kept up with inflation in the last 5 years. We know, as I mentioned earlier, that one third of ministers 65 and older have less than $50,000 in retirement savings. We also know that that kind of financial pressure is a key and common factor in pastors that decide to get out of the ministry.
Welcome to the Glasshouse Podcast. It's not often I get to bring one of my best pals on the show. Today we've got Dr. Hans Dilbeck from Guidestone. Hans, thanks for coming on the show.
It's great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity and your friendship.
And tell us a little bit about what you do at Guidestone for those who may not know.
Guidestone helps ministers and ministries enhance financial security for those who are serving Christ. So we help churches and pastors. Churches and their staff, like secretaries, custodians. We serve around 15,000 missionaries and mission sending groups, universities and their employees. So those who are serving Christ, we help those ministries take care of them by paying attention to their financial needs, particularly retirement planning and insurance.
I heard years ago that Jesus talked more about money than he did about hell or prayer, which is pretty amazing when you think about just topically how often Jesus talked about money, how important it is to the human being in our existence. Mm-hmm. And Lindley, we've had a lot of folks ask about this topic.
Yeah.
It's a sensitive issue.
Right.
They want us to talk about it so that they don't have to.
Well, and to be fair, we can, because we're not in that role anymore.
Right.
So, I mean, that is the beauty of the podcast, is we can kind of talk about some of the stress of it when it's not our story right now.
So Hans, let me set a hook for the show, and then we're going to ask you a couple of fun things before we get into the discussion. But years ago when I was serving as a pastor in my first church, the senior pastor from years ago was still on staff. His name was Paul Williams. He was there for 14 years from 1968 to 1982. And he was a faithful shepherd. Mm-hmm. But in his later years, he confided in me that he just didn't take care of his retirement. He lived in a parsonage, had no equity in a home, and he really battled with a lot of fear and uncertainty about what he's going to do at the end of his life, because he just hadn't really thought a lot about it. And I'm really thankful that today Guidestone and other institutions are coming alongside pastors and wives so they don't feel so alone in that, because pastors often feel like they have no one they can talk to about this particular issue.
Yeah, that's a great story, because we see that over and over again. And you know, most pastors, finances are not their primary motivator. They tend to not think about it, really sometimes not sufficiently care about it, and retirement can really sneak up on them.
So is this a story you still hear? I mean, you know, that was probably 16, 17 years ago, but I didn't know if that is still something you're hearing pretty regularly.
Oh, absolutely. We know that around one-third of ministers who are 65 and older have less than $50,000 in retirement savings.
Wow.
And a good percentage of those, you know, tell us they just assume they're never going to be able to retire. So that's definitely, we've made some progress, but it's definitely the case that oftentimes pastors get to retirement age and they really don't have a retirement option.
Okay, well, we need to warm you up first, Hans. We just feel like you're not quite ready for
Warming up the listener as well.
All right, go ahead, Lindley. Ask him a good question.
Okay, Dr. Dilbeck, I should feel like, yes, I've never called you that before. Since we're talking about money today, what was your first job and what was its wage? Go ahead and age yourself with this.
this definitely will. I was a paper boy.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Talk about a horrible job.
Very young. I was in fourth grade. What is fourth grade? 10 years old?
Fourth grade. Wow.
And a small town, you know, so I could walk around without any fear. So after school, I'd walk down to the paper office and fold or roll my papers and delivered about 75 of them on 12th and 13th Street between Grandview and Lynn.
That's awesome.
And, and collected $2.20 a month per house.
Wow.
I think that cleared I think I cleared $30 a month.
Holy cow, you're rolling in cash.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money for,
I mean, for a 10-year-old.
For a 10-year-old back in the day. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I was the richest kid on the block.
What was the name of the newspaper?
I grew up in a little town called Pawhuska, Oklahoma, and it was the Pawhuska Daily Journal Capital.
Is it still being printed?
I think it is. I think maybe it's a weekly and not a daily anymore. So I am... Okay. I'm assuming the name has changed.
Okay. All right. Hans, I have a question for you, and you're a good friend, but I don't know what you're going to say to this, but if we put $500 in your hand today and you had to blow it by the end of the day and you can't take Julie out for dinner or a getaway, which is the romantic answer, you're going to do something really selfish. What are you going to blow this money on?
You know what? Julie and I have 8 grandkids, so... if I've got $500 in my pocket, I'm probably buying something for a grandkid.
You don't need anything these days. You just would rather.
It's sad. It's sad. I mean, I did whatever. I can't go in a store with them because they'll come out with 3 sacks full of stuff.
That's awesome. And that's
grandkids
a lot of fun.
Are the weakness. Yeah.
I can't wait to be a grandpa. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, last question. So, thinking back over years and years, what is the thing you look back and regret the most buying? Like, was there ever a dumb purchase along the way?
Did you buy a set of steak knives on TV or something like that? Come on.
Let me say, if you asked Julie and I the same question, she would give this very same answer. The worst purchase I ever made was I decided to surprise her by bringing home a brand new dull brown minivan.
Nice.
Oh.
Yeah. Just what every woman wants.
Everything about that was wrong. It was ugly. It was a minivan. And I didn't involve her in the decision.
Yeah.
So,
but your heart was in the right place.
Yeah. It's the last minivan I ever purchased.
How long did she drive it?
Oh, about 9 months.
Okay.
But you know what? Now that our kids are older, when we go on vacation, we rent minivans. They love how easy it is to get in and out of them. The doors open automatically. Like, I'm thinking about going back to a minivan.
Go for it. Whatever you want.
All right. Well, back to the topic at hand. Hans, what are some of the common mistakes that you see churches making in regard to compensation and financially caring for their pastors? Because the church bears some responsibility. So what's going wrong there?
Yeah, no, you're right. Churches, and churches are good people, and by and large, they're trying to do the right thing. But we do see kind of 2 categories of mistake. One is they pay their pastor the wrong way. And what we mean by that is they just give him a lump sum of cash. You know, we've got $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000. Here it is. And then... they ask him to divide it up appropriately. And so it's putting the pressure on the pastor to decide, is he going to adequately fund his retirement account? Is he going to buy adequate health insurance? Is he going to structure it to where he takes tax advantage of those things and of some professional expenses? And so just by not structuring the compensation in a legitimate professional way, they're actually costing the pastor some money in taxable income, and they're giving themselves, the church, a kind of a false sense of how much they're paying him, and oftentimes forcing the pastor to decide between a livable wage, salary, and adequate benefits. And those things come back to bite him in the long run. So church is just understanding how they should appropriately structure a pay package is very important. The other thing is sometimes they don't pay the right wage. They're not paying enough.
Yeah.
Lifeway and Guidestone with state conventions do some work on surveys, and we know that pastor compensation is not keeping up with inflation.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you're paying the pastor the same today that you were paying him 3 or 4 years ago, then he's getting paid less because inflation's been a real thing the last 3 or 4 years. And so, and that survey is very helpful. I'm glad we do it, but even that survey is descriptive So in other words, if everybody's underpaid, then knowing what everybody's getting paid isn't really doing a lot of good. Churches need to think through what are comparable occupations. You know, maybe if it's a single staff church, what's a school teacher make? If it's a pastor who is managing, leading a staff, what's the middle school or the high school principal making? There are some salaries that are publicly available that you could kind of use to benchmark how you're compensating your pastor. And churches need to consider where they're living, what the cost of living is, and make sure that they're set an appropriate wage for their pastor.
Hans, I'm so glad you brought that up. Lindley shared a stat with me the other day. I don't know where you saw it, about the person who made $80,000.
Oh, well, I saw it on Instagram.
Oh, of course.
And it's always true on Instagram. No, what it was saying is the person who made like $80,000 in 1983 is equivalent to $243,000 now. Something very similar to that, just because the economy and the way things have changed. And the thing this reminds me of with you is that we know a story to where a pastor refused a raise year after year after year, and his heart was so pure in it, he didn't need it. He was older, and his children were out of the home, but it set up the next person for a little bit of failure because it wasn't the same scenario. That person had younger kids at home, had college expenses, wedding expenses, all those things coming up. But then it was hard on the church because they needed to jump it up like $30,000 or something. You know what I mean? And so that's a huge jump, and it makes the pastor moving in look greedy.
Yeah, that's a great point, because the truth is, when the pastor advocates for himself and helps bring the church along to compensate their pastor appropriately, he's really not just doing it himself, but he's teaching the church to take care of their shepherd in the future also. And that's a part of his role. And so it's not just about, my current need. It is about setting the standard for the future.
So what would you say to a pastor right now who's in a church where he's making the wrong wage? He doesn't have the right benefits, and he doesn't know how to address this. How does he work together with a group of people in the church to get this, start that process?
Yes. Pastors are almost intuitively hesitant to wade in to this discussion because they know that in some ways it's fraught, right? They don't want to look greedy. They don't want to look self-interested. They know that there's a good chance that this, if they initiate this conversation, it could be misunderstood by some. But it's always been that way. You know, the guy that founded Guidestone, the first president over 100 years ago, I read in an article where he said, pastors, you have to start talking about this. You have to start advocating for yourself. And even when you read the book of Philippians in the Bible, you find Paul is talking about money. He's talking about financial support that the church at Philippi had sent to him. And he's very confident and clear in the way he talks about it, but he's also very careful about it, in broaching the subject. And so it tells us that, from the beginning, pastors exercise a kind of an appropriate carefulness, sensitivity to the issue. However, from the beginning, it is something that we need to talk about, both for the sake of our families, for the sake of the development of the church, and for the future. And the Bible clearly shows us that pattern also. So, I think in that conversation, there's always a kind of a hard skill and a soft skill element, right? Pastors need to inform themselves, and we can help them with that. Our website has a lot of great resources.
Yeah.
Get informed about the facts concerning ministerial compensation, but also exercise a great deal of wisdom and sensitivity about, who in the church, who in your church should you approach? Who's the best advocate there? Who can you bring along? What is your process? Because in every church, the people and the processes are a little bit different. It's hard. There's not really a cookie cutter approach. But so be careful, but be confident. And advocating yourself is not something you should avoid.
I love what you said there about doing your research first. you know, it's kind of like before you go buy a used car, you probably want to check the Kelley Blue Book to see what it's worth. For a pastor, I would say even in the Baptist world, go to your state convention and just say, can you help me determine what other churches our size are paying so that I have an objective point of view?
They're great advocates of state convention, and a lot of churches are connected to an association, and those association leaders a lot of times are a great resource. And the data is out there if the guy takes advantage of the opportunity to find it. But then carefully and appropriately approach the right people in the right time, and work a process. You may not get to where you need to be overnight. It may take, you know, a budget cycle or two.
Yeah.
But taking the initiative is important.
Hans, when we were talking about this conversation with you, we asked if you had any research, because sometimes it's easier for people to receive this when there is some proven research behind it. I know that you said you had a few statistics about that.
Well, we know for certain, as I mentioned earlier, that pastoral compensation has not kept up with inflation in the last 5 years.
Really?
That's a certainty. We know, as I mentioned earlier, that 1/3 of ministers 65 and older have less than $50,000 in retirement savings. And we know that over half are not confident that they're going to have what they need in their retirement years.
Hmm.
We also know that kind of financial pressure is a key and common factor in pastors that decide to get out of the ministry.
Yeah.
There's a connection between financial security, you know, adequate pay, good retirement planning, insurance that you can count on. There's a connection between financial security and what we call resilience. A minister and his family's capacity to persevere, to bounce back, to stay in the work in the face of disappointment.
I want to go back to something that you said that I think is so important for the audience is, how do you know who the right people in your church are to talk to? I've heard horror stories about pastors making comments from the pulpit, you know, I don't get paid enough, or, you know, there's a way to really blow your ministry up if you don't think carefully about the person or the people who are the right people. So how would you coach a pastor who says, I don't know who to talk to?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, let me gently say this, that one of the things a pastor has to do is make sure that he and his wife are taking action to, as best they can, get their own financial house in order.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Before they begin to advocate for better compensation. In other words, if we're not being a good steward of what we have, if we're wasting money or reckless with our spending, if we're not giving appropriately, and then we start asking for better compensation, people notice that. It becomes a hindrance for us. So we want to first be good stewards and managers of our own household. But as far as who to talk to, pastors do that all the time. You know, that's part of shepherding the flock, is we know who the leaders are, we know who the spiritual people are, we know who we can count on and trust, and we just got to exercise the same discretion when it comes to this matter. You know, who will the church listen to? Who can I trust? Who will understand? And begin to work through that process. And just like you do in any other initiative in the church, build the key leaders' support in that effort as you move forward.
Yeah.
Does the lack of income emotionally affect the pastor over time? Have you experienced that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a guy named Matt Bloom has done a lot of research on ministers and their resilience. And one of the key areas that he identified that caused pastors to quit is what he calls a lack of a supply-need alignment. So, you know, when the pastor and his family's needs are not being supplied, then oftentimes that ends up in their decision to leave the ministry. And part of that is a financial reality. I can't pay my bills. But part of it is emotional. You know, that the New Testament word honor and value is related. The sense of honor is really almost a kind of a financial word. To show honor is to show value. And when a pastor is not adequately supported financially, it feels like a lack of value, a lack of honor. And when things are going well, pastors would do the work for free. But when there's adversity, when there's discouragement, and then you put on top of that the financial pressure that comes from lack of compensation, that's a tough combination.
Yeah.
And it causes a lot of people to grow weary and lose heart.
Yeah. Hans, if a church is struggling financially, like maybe the church is going backwards, they're not hitting the budget. The last few years, they've seen a decline in giving. How do they not lose their pastor in the process? Like you said, inflation hasn't kept up. So he feels bad asking because the church is struggling. Well, how do you approach that situation, or how can the church approach it?
No, that's a great question, because that's exactly where a lot of churches are. Like I said earlier, you know, if you ask any church, do you want to pay your pastor adequately? They'd all say, yes, we do. Or even if, do you want to pay more? They would say, yeah, we'd love to pay more, but we don't have it. And so I think part of the conversation with the church has to do with a real conversation about discipleship and about priorities in their budget. So in other words, some churches are struggling financially because their people are not being good stewards, right? And so if you have a decent number of people and you can't adequately compensate your pastor, then it's a legitimate question to ask. Why don't we have enough money? You know, or do we have enough money? We're just not giving it faithfully. Also, these are hard questions, but churches need to ask, do we have maybe too many people on our paid staff? Mm-hmm. You know, are we paying too many people an inadequate wage that's keeping us from paying a right number of people a proper wage, proper compensation? And some churches can't pay their pastor well because he's got too many people on staff. Those are hard conversations to make, but it's something we see oftentimes. And then, listen, most of our churches are bivocational. And some of them who still claim to be full-time churches, maybe they're not actually paying a full-time salary and compensation. And so that question about the important role of a pastor who supplements his income with another vocation is important. And so it could be the church truly is doing all they can for their pastor. That's great. But if he can't support his family, then he and the church need to have an open conversation about giving him an opportunity to find some other income source.
Yeah.
Which happens in the kingdom of God all over the world. It's really been the secret sauce of Southern Baptist life from the beginning. And in some ways, this convention is built on bivocational pastors who faithfully serve, shepherd the flock while they supplement their income in some other way. And there's great dignity in that. It's, you know, but the church has to come alongside and agree with the pastor that that's something necessary for him in order to adequately support his family. And even when they do that, they've got to pay attention about how they're paying him, how's the other source of income coming in, to make sure that his compensation is structured in a way that's to his advantage.
Yeah. You know, I always try to think about how would I handle situation, and I'm not saying I always handle it right, but in that situation, I'd be interested in what you'd say to this, Hans. I think I would sit down with the right people, and I would say, look, I feel awkward bringing this up because I know the church is in financial challenge, but when I was a kid, I grew up in a very poor household, and I was not able to go to the college I wanted because I had to raise my own funds, and I've always had a dream of being able to send my kids to college. Yeah. And on the current track we're on, I don't know how I can continue to stay as the pastor and achieve that dream. Can we talk about that? That way we're coming at it from the heart level and not just, I need $10,000 more or whatever it is. You know, if you can really let people inside your heart and let them see you have good motives here. You want to provide for your family, which is why, going back to what you said, if you're outwardly not taking care of what you have, you're not going to have any credibility in that conversation. But, you know, I think pastors are afraid to share their heart with people. You know, they have dreams. They have hopes just like everybody else. Some of those are financial.
Yeah, I agree. Helping them helping the people view the pastor as a person.
Yep.
Who has whose family has the same needs of every family. I think it's very important. You know, the first church I served was a bivocational church. Julie was working as an RN, and I was going to seminary, and we were living in the parsonage, and they were paying us $1,000 a month.
That was your first job.
I thought I was filthy rich at that point.
And you know, that was great, but we got a couple of years into that, and Julie was expecting a baby, and we needed insurance. Hmm. And so I can remember being very nervous about this conversation, but I called Guidestone, which used to be called the Annuity Board. I called the office, and they mailed me a packet of information about insurance. Of course, this is before the internet, right? and I gathered the information about what medical insurance would cost, and I went to the deacons in that little church. There were four of them, and they served as kind of both the personnel and the finance committee, really, and laid the information out and said, I've got to have insurance for my family, and I need you to pay for it and not me, you know? And they understood that, and the church stepped up and provided. Hmm. Now, sometimes good men ask in just the same proper way, and the church doesn't step up. I understand that. But oftentimes, if we gather the facts, and as you said, just lay our heart out and ask, a church will do their best to do the right thing.
I agree.
What would you have done if they'd said no? Like, for the listener who's tried that and the church said no, like, what do you do at that point?
No, that's a great question. Because, you know, the scriptures say, if a man doesn't manage his own household, how can he lead the church of God? And so we do have this responsibility to manage and provide for our own household. And, I'm not sure what I would have done in that situation. But I don't think it's improper for a pastor to consider the needs of his family. And, one option might be to say, listen, if you as a congregation legitimately don't feel like you can provide it, then, I'm going to have to find another income source because I've got to have it, mm-hmm. you know, I thank the Lord to give people leadership at that point.
Yeah, what would you say to the guy out there who doesn't think their personnel committee is going about this in the most professional way, or maybe they just don't have a good system? Is there a consultant or a way to reach out to Guidestone and say, could you guys help us get a better process?
Well, in speaking that, I was going to ask if you'd give a kind of a test case scenario. So if somebody out there listening, because a lot of our listeners are in very small churches in small towns. Yeah. I don't want to misunderstand what Guidestone does. It's not like financial planning, is it?
No, not financial planning per each individual, but if they call or reach out to Guidestone, then we can help them understand how to access this information about how compensation should be structured, about what surveys are showing about appropriate compensation for them. And as Ben said earlier, the state convention has a lot of that data and support for those guys, and also directors of missions. They can find kind of the hard data part of it. And I also that association leader oftentimes is the one who can help them navigate that church and understand who to approach and how to approach them.
So if they came to you and they said, Hans, give us some advice. If we're making this in a lump sum, like you mentioned at the beginning of the episode, is there one thing that you would say, do not forgo, like, not insurance, but like long-term retirement or anything like that?
The biggest mistake, the biggest mistake that people make in providing for retirement is waiting too late to start. The average age of someone who opens a retirement account at Guidestone is 41.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, it's really hard to catch up if you don't start until 41. And so even if it's just a few hundred dollars, even if it doesn't feel like very much, if you can get started in your 20s, it makes a big difference on that retirement account. And so, I think to not say, well, I can't put much in retirement, so I'm just not going to do it all. That's a mistake that ministers oftentimes make.
That reminds me of a line that Paul Williams told me once. He said, in ministry, they taught me all about the Old and New Testament, but nobody taught me about compound interest.
Yeah, that's right.
So I hope the seminaries are teaching this now and helping guys understand, like, you need to start early and maximize those match, where you can match money and use those dollars wisely while you're young. But I would say, for the typical pastor, though, who's struggling to pay his bills, it's pretty easy to defer that.
It is, and that goes back to what I said earlier about churches paying in the wrong way. They really should not put that pressure on the pastor to decide, should these dollars be in salary or in retirement? The church should say, this is your salary, and it's a legitimate number, and then we are going to make the right retirement contribution for you. That's the appropriate way to go about it.
I'm going to ask you a edgy question, and you can say your answer and decide later you don't want it put out there. I can envision in some scenarios there's a church where it's kind of deacon ruled, and they kind of feel like it's their job to keep the pastor in his place. They were here before he got here. They'll be here when he's gone. And some of that power play can be money, Hans. Mm-hmm. If we keep him poor, he won't get too big for his britches, and we'll continue to cycle through pastors, but we'll keep the church the way we want it.
Yeah.
How often do you see that kind of thing? Is that the anomaly? Do you find like most churches are really trying hard, they just don't have the right tools?
Yeah, I think most churches are trying. I think there's sometimes what you said is true. That goes back to what we were talking about earlier. A pastor teaching what the Bible says about the workman being worthy of his hire, about honor and value for the elder who rules well and teaches the Bible. Discipling the church along these lines is not just work a pastor's doing for himself in the present. It's work he's doing for the future of the church.
Yeah.
And so when a pastor finds himself in a negative situation, like you just described, it's because, two or three pastors before him have allowed that to develop and continue.
Yeah.
And the truth is it may take two or three pastors to break that cycle. Sometimes those are cycles that are hard to break. But it goes back to, this is in part discipleship. It's shepherding the flock. It's leading the church to understand what is their role. There's a lot of pastors who are very committed to preaching verse by verse through books of the Bible. But when they get to the verses that talk about the pastor, his work, his compensation, his needs, his qualifications, we have a tendency to kind of skip over that.
It feels self-serving.
Yeah, it does. But the flock needs to hear that part of the book.
Yeah.
Can I chime in here?
Yeah.
And this is where every episode I have something where I say, Angie may edit this out.
Yeah, here it comes.
Here it comes.
Brace yourself, Hans.
So, it's not wrong. I think what's hard for me being on this side of it, because Ben is a pastor, is that, of course, he got his undergrad. He got his MDiv, which a lot of people don't know is a 90-hour master's degree. It's not your MBA that's 30 to 35 hours. I mean, 90 hours is a lot of school. then he has his doctorate degree. And so there are people in the church who are, you know, lawyers who have their doctorate degree, doctors, they go to a lot of school that oftentimes are paid more, but then it's seen like the pastor, that should be expected. They should have these degrees, but they should still make the money that is not really fairly compensated for the amount of hours they've gone to school. So there's really no comment here. I just wanted to say that because I do think it's hard being the wives of pastors who have done this. Because like we, you know, you said Julie worked while you went through school, through seminary. I was a dental hygienist and worked, you know, to put Ben through seminary for many years. And so like we see the sacrifice in the home and the hours of study, and especially at night once you have kids. But the church doesn't necessarily see it. And I don't think they understand, you know, they want a pastor with all kinds of experience, or they want a pastor with a seminary degree. Well, fairly, if a business person has an MBA, they get paid more. So I do think that's a really hard thing for pastors.
Yeah, I think some pastors feel slighted.
Yeah.
Like they've got, you know, a terminal degree, worked really hard to get there, but it doesn't seem to have a lot of value right. to the church. Going to school while you're in ministry and maybe having kids, like that's not easy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you just used the biblical language about value, right? When the Bible says that the elder who leads well and is good at teaching the word is worthy of double honor, it's using that value word, but it's clearly using it in a financial context, right? And so that sense that how you're being compensated is connected to your sense of value. There's some biblical support to that, and it also says something about what the church values. And so we need our churches to show that they value the shepherd of the flock, the role of the one who is proclaiming the gospel, the one who's answered God's call in his life. To be a pastor, that has value to them. These are things that are, I think, from a biblical perspective, are very important.
I just want to continue to emphasize, when you say value, we're talking about being fairly paid, equitable to what other churches that size pay their pastor. Yeah. If you're that church that's just well below the market, this is who we're talking about. We're not talking about churches that pastors are just wanting to make more money for the sake of more money. They just want to feel like they're being paid worthy of the responsibilities that they've taken on, which is where the rub gets. Go ahead. What will you say?
Okay, so I'm going to take it one step further and speak for the women here, pastors' wives, who what you said is so true. Like, they just want to feel valued. And sometimes in these little churches, the pastor's wife is serving in a role as a volunteer. And I do think that churches, they probably can't pay her. And she probably doesn't want to, because you said at the beginning, most people in ministry are doing it because their heart is called to it. They're drawn to it. Right. But I do think if churches every once in a while could give the family or the pastor's wife a small gift card or a token of appreciation, it would go a long way, because they feel like, gosh, am I adding any value here? Because I'm putting hours and hours in every week, but nobody's acknowledging it.
And that's tricky in the church.
Yeah.
No, it is. And the other dynamic that's developed over the last 20 or 25 years is, more and more pastors' wives are working full time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because of the financial demands. But some churches still have the same expectation
Correct.
That they had of a pastor's wife when their compensation was so adequate that the pastor's wife wasn't working full time. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that churches kind of factor that in. Some churches honestly pay a wage that requires the pastor's wife to work. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then it's important that the congregation kind of factor that into their calculus and realize that's what's going on, and adjust their expectations accordingly.
It would be interesting to get some pastors and wives on the show to talk about that dynamic, choices they've had to make to stay in ministry and to be able to put their kids through college or whatever. I also think the bivocational pastor is an interesting episode. Just what a different dynamic that is.
And God bless the bivocational pastors. I tell you what, they're the heroes in my mind keep this whole thing running. And I'm so grateful for their willingness to serve and the skill set that God has given so many of them so that they can provide for their families in some other way while they're faithfully shepherding the flock of God.
I want to say this. We had Paul Tripp on an episode a long time ago, and he made a statement that has stuck with me. He said, fruitfulness is a result of longevity. And he said, not that people don't get called away to new places, but the longer someone stays, the more that relational equity grows, the more influential they can be. A big part of this, I think, of the conversation has to be, look, I would like to stay here long term. I would love to continue to be the pastor here long term. In order for that to happen, as my family grows, as my needs grow, can we talk about how we might make that possible? I think you're going to find out a lot in that conversation. I think you're going to find out how pleased they are with you as a pastor, how much they really want you to stay. Or it could be a situation where you're beginning to see, okay, this is a short-term pastorate for me, but I'm going to be faithful to the end as I also look for something else. I mean, those are real realities.
Very insightful, Ben. I think that is an appropriate conversation to have. And I agree with you about longevity. And I agree with you about how that will show a lot about how the congregation feels about their pastor's work. It's really interesting to me that in 1 Timothy chapter 5, Paul says that the elder who rules well is worthy of double honor. And so he's kind of framing that in such a way of it, you know, if you want to be better compensated, then make sure that you are being faithful, that you are doing, that you are serving well, because that's certainly something the church responds
to. Yeah. Well, and I just think about it this way. You're how long in the seat now at Guidestone?
2 years.
You're 2 years in. You came from, you know, executive director of ministry at the state level. The value that you're going to be able to bring to Guidestone 5 years from now is far greater than it is today, because you will have multiplied relationships, understanding, knowledge, context.
Yeah.
So I want churches to understand that if you like your pastor, you think he's a great guy, you want to keep him around, somebody's got to be thinking about ways to continue to encourage he and his family.
But that, yeah. I mean, you have to be careful there. I mean, sometimes the pastor is called away. I know we're going to get some email from Nat that says, we were compensated well, but we got called away.
Yeah, but he won't be able to say, and one of the reasons I felt called away is that I didn't feel like my needs were being taken care of. I think the church has to make sure that's removed from the equation.
I get that.
Yeah.
And that's the best case scenario. So closing words, Hans. Say a little bit about what Guidestone can do. If you're out there and you feel stuck, what can you do?
Well, we want to be your partner. So we want to help. We want to serve those who serve the Lord. And we believe that our calling is to enhance financial security in order to build resilience. There are a lot of factors with resilience. And we can't do all of that work, but we can help on the financial security part. And we have resources to help a minister advocate for themselves. We have resources that they can put in the hands of that church leader, so that they've got the data, and then really our strategy is to help the minister start well, stay well, and finish well.
That's great.
That's how we break it down. So, you know, how do you need to get started? What are the touch points along the way? The birth of the first child, and, you know, when your children are turning teenagers, when you're turning 50, what are some touch points along the way where you need to check on your progress? And then as you approach retirement, then how do you finish well? And listen, you know, financial security in retirement is really about freedom. It's about freedom from anxiety, but it's also about freedom for service. And, you know, good retirement preparation planning is, you know, at its most basic level, it's that freedom from anxiety.
Yeah.
But it also has this opportunity for, you know, people who are called to serve, they serve until they die, right? So retired pastors, they're always doing something. It's not like they quit the ministry.
Right.
But in the retirement years, if the retirement plan is adequate, then they can do what they feel God leading them to do.
Yeah.
They have a freedom in it. And they really have a significant kingdom impact. We could do a whole segment about men and women who have retired from ministry, but how they're impacting the kingdom, sometimes in greater ways, you know, in their 70s and 80s than they did when they were fully employed. And so that freedom to serve is really something that inspires
us. That's so good. I was with had lunch with a pastor this week. He's been at his church for over 35 years, and he's trying to decide as they transition if he'll stick around, if he'll continue to go to the church. You know, that's a hard thing. And yeah. He said, you know, my biggest problem with staying here is that I really want to fish and hunt. And everybody's going to want me to keep doing their funeral, and I kind of want some years where I can do some fishing and hunting. And, that's a normal human desire to have a little time for yourself after serving the flock for so many years. So I think you're right. Freedom is the word that people want.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and if you go to guidestone.org/ministerial resources, there are tons of short videos that talk about many of the things we've talked about. You know, why you shouldn't opt out of Social Security, how you should structure your compensation package, how to find adequate compensation. There's tons of resources there. Ministerial resources, guidestone.org.
Hans, we love you. Thanks for coming on, and we'll have you back in the future to talk about something else.
We look forward to the next time we break bread together.
All right. Talk to you soon.
The Glass House is brought to you by Lifeway. It is produced and edited by Angie Elkins with help from William Hall. Sound engineering by Donnie Gordon. Artwork by Heather Brzezinski. And photography by Rebecca McVeigh.